Thank you, Natasha. This was really, really a very. Yeah, it was. I think it's very hard to narrate this story, as I think was also. You managed to do it in the best possible way, I think, to also go and work through some of the contradictions that are that deeply characterize the Yugoslav experience of the 20th century. Anyways, maybe we start actually with your questions, and then are there any questions or comments? Yes.
My question relates to Edo Murtić and the Exit 51 group. On the one hand, you presented Murtić's interpretation of abstraction as much more acceptable in Yugoslavia than it was the case with the post neo-constructivist approach of the 51 group. On the other hand, these group. The members of this group, they were designing the official pavilions for international exhibitions and fairs and so on. So this is something that is, to me, it's a bit disturbing how this relates to each other. Maybe you can elaborate a little more on that.
I mean, I'm not sure I understand what is really disturbing, that both of it existed at the same time. But what I tried to say is that Murtić, first of all, what he did work towards abstraction. It would take him much longer time to really reach cross the threshold of so-called pure abstraction. But the paintings he painted coming back from his trip to America, they could also be re-inscribed in the national pre-war history. So there were certain trajectories that could be introduced, while what Exit 51 did had absolutely no relations to anything that ever happened in Yugoslavia, in all national cultural spaces of Yugoslavia before the war, which is why they had to make their own trajectory, their own starting points, which is what made them probably, which was also probably part of their motivation to clear things for themselves, to make a didactic exhibition, which was hugely successful. And the form of how they were engaged with the spaces for pavilions, or generally with the architectural spaces, and in some kind of more, in a softer version, became very typical for design, especially in socialist Yugoslavia. But in painting itself, different variants of an art informel and lyrical abstraction, or something much more akin to what we see here with Edo Murtić, who will continue to be the most prominent, among the most prominent artists until his death in 2000, and kind of always considered regime artist. So what maybe your question refers to, that both of these positions could be taken as positions close to regime, as there is this story that Murtić traveled on a payment by party because party wanted him to see how these paintings look like so that they can reproduce it at home and show the nice civilized place of socialism, which is also a place of freedom, as abstraction was equaling the freedom. But these stories, these are kind of, as I said, in his case, it's a speculation. But generally, what I tried to do here is to suggest is that this dichotomy, dissident artists or regime artist, is very porous and much more problematic than it looks from a distance. Yeah.
More questions? You opened with Bakić, and I was thinking how probably a lot of people here sitting in the audience encountered one of those popular links that was circulating on social media and the internet a couple of years ago of of what was in the title of that reportage, a link called the Abandoned Soviet Monuments, but was actually representing monuments to anti-fascist struggle during the Second World War built in Yugoslavia. And I was just wondering whether you have a kind of an immediate maybe a reflection on that phenomena, because at the time we also organized in Zagreb one of the one event, but we kind of tried to unpack a little bit the kind of the impetus behind, you know, the move back to these monuments as some sort of utopian ideal incarnated, and whether the revolution can actually be incarnated in matter and a form, which these monuments to a certain degree tried, so to say. Could you maybe expand a little bit more on the kind of role that these monuments that we saw in the beginning, but that feature also very prominently in contemporary art production coming from Yugoslavia, ex-Yugoslavia, had within this particular political and cultural landscape of this tension between abstraction and socialist realism, because these monuments are very much abstract, as we saw also in the example you gave.
I know you mentioned one thing, which is this utopian, kind of vague utopian aspiration that could be, that is taken as part of these monuments, but I think that generally the interest that was obviously sparked in a kind of lifestyle magazines also, and it's a part of, it's a part of fashion, almost like contemporary Russian fashion designers that are everywhere. It has its link to, it has this link of coming back from the future, but in a sense of the future from which socialist world was excluded, because they were, this future is something that they just, that they still have to pack, to catch up with. And I think it has a lot to do exactly with this culturalization of politics, where the actual content of politics, which is communism in this case, is secluded by a focus on cultural memorabilia, kind of. And it's a part and parcel of nostalgia for socialism, and etc. But I think you said that it's very hard to, it's impossible, and I agree with it, to make a monument that would be a form of revolution. But what is interesting in the case of Yugoslav socialist monuments, although we are not here talking about 50s, it's kind of more second half of 60s and 70s, when the country was rich enough to produce really those huge monuments. The one you saw at the beginning was built with the help of a French aviation. And what I forgot to mention, and I want to say it always, this very monument was actually destroyed in 1990 during the Yugoslav wars, and not in some battles, but it was destroyed on purpose, and it took several attempts to manage to destroy this steel monster by Croatian army, because it was such a powerful symbol of socialism, and this was one of the monuments destroyed, and there were estimates that there are 3,000 monuments destroyed in territory of former Yugoslavia during the 90s. But what I wanted to say about Yugoslav monuments in 60s and 70s is that they were, the abstract form was mostly dominant, but this abstraction had a lot of metaphoric ambitions. But what made them really valuable in cases when it worked out was that they were also spaces of socialization. They were built usually on the places where battles happened, kind of in a nature. So they were never on the middle of the, in the cities, in the middle on the main square or at the crossroads. They were always in a nature, and they were conceived as educational and research institutions. So around which there would be institutes supposed to research and work on the material, and as a places of socialization. And some of them, some of the best one also survived. And actually, they still have this role of socialization. I'm specifically having in mind, for example, Tjentište monument in Bosnia. Or, yeah.
Any more questions or comments or thoughts? Thank you, Natasha. Thank you so much. We are continuing, or we are having a break now?
We have a break.
We have a little break. Okay, thank you. Thank you so much.